Welcome to another episode of the Growth Focus Podcast, where we bring in together tech leaders from all across the globe to share their time, their insights, and their expertise with us so that you and I can help grow our businesses. My name is Gary Lafferty, your host and creator and founder of Authority Engines, where we help tech leaders drive more revenue to their companies by allowing them to turn their conversations into clients and their expertise into pipelines. On this episode, I am extremely excited to have our guest. We're going to be talking about very niche markets and how to succeed in that. What strategies has helped grow a company, even through some hard times, plus looking into the future of where these businesses could be. So there's got an awful lot to get through today. So pay attention, get yourself strapped in, have a glass of water, a cup of coffee, get a note, pen, whatever you're going to use, because it's going to be an absolute cracker of an episode. So without further ado, Shannon, it's an absolute pleasure and honor to have you here on the show. Why don't you start off by introducing yourself? Tell us who you are and what is it that you do?
Gary, it is my pleasure to be here with you today. I'm Dr. Shannon Gregg. I'm the president of Cloud Adoption Solutions, a Salesforce consultancy.
Interesting. So, you know, Salesforce consultancy, a lot of people here listening and that will think, yep, I think I know what that means. So we're going to just leave that door open for them just a little bit, and we're going to dive into that as we go through the episode. So let's, as usual, dive back to the beginning, the very start. What inspired you to launch a consultancy and carve out such a focused niche such as life sciences?
I think, Gary, like so many other people, I found myself with an unmet need. So I was working in an e-clinical company that acquired many other companies, and I found that I would acquire their CRM instance, most frequently Salesforce.com, but I also would acquire their managed services provider. And I watched so much turnover that then translated to me or my team having to instruct these technological experts on what it is that the life sciences industry did. And I got so frustrated paying people to understand our industry and thought, why isn't there just a partner out there that focuses specifically on the life sciences? And when I didn't find the one I wanted, I decided I would create it.
I love that, Jen. I love it. Obviously, especially when you're working in there, you can actually see where the flaws are. You can see where the holes in the bucket is. So when it came to that frustration, what was the thing that was so obvious and so glaring that other MSPs just could not see?
I think what is so glaring and obvious is that even though every industry says we're really different, we're really unique, this one does have very specific challenges in that there is a lot of regulation that rules not only what the companies are doing, but everything that's supporting that. So even specific things like if you write an SOP and the FDA comes for an audit, they can actually audit that SOP, even if it's just about how to make a cold call. So there's so many small nuances that were a large barrier to entry in terms of learning how to deal with our go-to-market machine that it just felt untenable for us to continue to hire companies that did not come with that base level knowledge.
Gotcha. I gotcha. So for those who really don't know what you do or don't know your space very well, could you describe for us the core problem that you actually solve as how you see it and the types of clients that you serve best?
Typically, we are working with organizations that are shifting out of founder-led sales into having their first foray at a sales team, or are making the shift from being a small business into a mid-market or mid-commercial business and recognizing that their sales team is doing a lot of manual work, tracking their opportunities, their contacts, their accounts. And so we work really well to identify, here's an area where automation can help you. Here's an area where AI can help you, so that your marketing and sales team members can go do what they do best. And that is never, ever, Gary, sitting down and doing data entry.
Yeah. So people listening now thinking, oh my geez, this is one of the biggest time sucks ever. It is the data entry and the reporting I have to do for that. So what is the biggest myth that you are coming across with your potential, with your clients, your prospects that have really stopped them approaching this way of doing business before and kept it doing the old ways?
Most of the time, they feel, and this is the myth, that CRM is meant for the stakeholders, the shareholders, the board. It's meant to babysit the sales team members, and it's not going to actually help them manage their book of business. And so a lot of times we can just ask 5 or 6 questions to say, okay, here's how you can gain intelligence out of a nicely populated customer relationship management tool that will allow you to prioritize, to understand where the business is that you're missing, and then to look at key signals to say, these are the opportunities we should focus on, and these are the ones we should allow to sit on the back burner because the chances they'll convert are actually pretty low. So we get inside and help to bust that myth by saying, you know, a well-architected system is actually going to help you manage your book of business really well.
Yeah, I've come across a lot of people within the Salesforce field, as you can imagine. And there's people, obviously, we have listeners and subscribers who are in that Salesforce field. And there's this general, let's say, misunderstanding or general feeling that it is usually for the enterprise, that is massive enterprise companies, rather than the smaller to mid-sized businesses. That, what are your insights and thoughts on that?
You know, Gary, I think anything can be a CRM tool if you have a theory behind it. So Excel or Google Sheets, that's a CRM tool. And so once you understand that structure and process, you will find the time where you say, it's time for us to shift to a tool that may be a little bit more focused on what our business needs. We have a customer that only has 3 people in the entire company, but they use Salesforce very, very well to allow for e-signature, triggers to move from sales into production and delivery to invoicing. And so it really comes down to what's replicable in your business. That's a process that you can allow the system to handle. How much is it worth to you to take that process and put it into technology and allow that part to run so that you can do the part that only you can do, and that is service and delight your customers and prospects?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just freeing up the time, isn't it? Once you've got the process, the old adage of how do you run a business properly is run the process. If you let the, as long as you've got a process to let run, manage that, you can get on and to can grow your business. So let's talk about growing your business. You've been running now since 2018, over the last 5 or 6 years. How has your lead generation strategies evolved from launch to where it is today?
We've definitely evolved from thinking about the approach that was, you know, technologically, it was in the 20-teens. And when you think about things being pre-COVID and post-COVID, they've certainly changed, right? And we've changed along with them. So we were doing that sort of automation, use lead lists and signaling to identify who may be interested in what you're doing. And now we are so focused on hyper-prospecting to understand who actually is in our ICP, our ideal client profile, and are the people that want to hear from us, instead of us taking that sort of spray and pray approach with, you know, personalization at scale, which I will tell you, Gary, used to be such a buzzword that I think we all believed it for a while. But if you just say those words slowly out loud, it doesn't even make sense. You can't personalize at scale. Those two things can't coexist. So we've shifted our mindset to say, we want to find the people that truly need our help instead of pestering a bunch of people who don't with our messaging.
No, and that's such a key thing there, Shannon, because the more and more we talked about the leaders with the leaders here on this podcast, we hear it time and time again, it's relationship building. We're still in the relationship building, and it's very hard to build relationships at scale. In fact, it's impossible to build real, true relationships at scale. And you can only really do that with authenticity, with people that you can actually really help. And one of the things, you know, when you and I were talking before is that you mentioned creating short YouTube videos and you address reoccurring problems to help them. How have you found this pay it forward content method help with your inbound interest or even trust building with your prospect?
This is a precipice that a lot of people will stand on and peer over and say, if I give too much information away, then nobody's going to need my service, and how will I ever pay my mortgage and for my car? And I'm here to tell you, Gary, we have found if you can deliver small bits of wisdom and knowledge that people can immediately use and apply, and we do that through the Cloud Adoption Solutions YouTube channel. Hey, you have this point problem? Here's a point solution in 4 minutes or less. People may use it and never call us, but chances are good they will develop trust They understand we know what we're talking about. They recognize that we come from a heart of education and we want you to know how to do it. We'd rather teach you how to fish than do all the fishing for you. And they recognize that we're there when they need us. And so oftentimes we're building this relationship long before we know there's somebody on the other side of the table at our date. So I really think that type of proactive communication through educational videos has super paid off for us.
No, and I couldn't agree more. We're great advocates here at Growth Focus on doing education-based marketing, you know, educating your client, educating your base out there. And it's lovely to see someone like you actually doing it, because the word thought leadership is so overused. It's almost saturated now and it's lost its really true meaning. And you are clearly a thought leader within your space by doing that. How intentional, Shannon, have you been about founder-led marketing and putting your voice at the forefront of what you actually do?
That's another thing, Gary, that has evolved. And I think you've got a real theme of evolution in all of your podcasts. And I appreciate that you share your videos to educate everybody too. The evolution of founder-led marketing is something that I've had to arrive at, because I came from enterprise myself. And the idea was always let people trust in the company and what we're capable of doing. And not one person's CV should be at the forefront of a project, so that if that person no longer is involved in the project, we don't lose it. And so I was tentative and timid about saying, hey, I have these big ideas and you should be interested in them, because I want them also to recognize you're going to work with my team members who in many cases are much smarter than I am in the area that they play inside of. And just about a year ago, I was working with a coach who said, you've got to let your big voice out and allow people to see the reason you started this company is because you have a particular intersectional idea on the way that Salesforce and go-to-market technology should be used in heavily regulated industries like the life sciences. So it's burgeoning for me, Gary. I think I've only sort of shifted into that for the past year, and the time very much feels like now.
No, absolutely. We are now in a time, Shannon, that, as you say, we live in a world of instant gratification. And when we search for something, when we need an answer, we want that answer now. We're looking for instant entertainment. We're looking for just curiosity. This is just the world we live in, whether we like it or not. I know the tech industry has always frowned upon social media, but we're still humans at the end of the day. And if you're just sitting there and you're looking through, you want to be forefront of mind. So that being said, and I think you alluded to it just in your last answer there, there's going to be people listening who are nodding their head and going, yes, I know I should be doing this. But people in tech are not known to get in front of the spotlight. They're not known to feel comfortable in that particular area. What kind of advice would you give to those who are thinking, yes, Shannon, I agree with you. Yes, Gary, I should be doing it, but it's just not me. I just don't know. I don't want to come across stupid. What would you say to that?
I would like to tell you a quirky idea that our team had last summer that we put into play. And that was, we took an improv class together as a team. So we got together for 6 to 8 weeks and we learned the basics of improv. None of us are really that funny. So it wasn't for us to learn how to, you know, stand out on whose line is it anyway, but it allowed us to use that yes and concept in a way that said we can build upon each other, we can listen carefully to our prospects and customers, and we can say, I hear what you're saying, and this is what I think, or this is what I want to ask you next. And this was a really nice way to let everybody feel a little bit loose about having these types of conversations, because typically folks who are heavy in technology aren't necessarily social butterflies, and that makes sense. So finding a way to get a little bit comfortable with being uncomfortable, to develop that muscle of call and response, can be done through improv or a Toastmasters group or speaking in front of audiences where the heavy gravity isn't quite there. So in front of organizations like nonprofits or churches or communities. So getting out there and exercising the same way you would with anything else is just a good way to start pushing past that stage fright and believing in yourself, because you wouldn't have your job if you weren't really good at what you do.
Yeah, that's a very good point, Shannon. And while I was just thinking, while you were just answering that question, my brain was going in so many different directions, because number one, my wife has had her own tech company for over 20 years. And in Chicago, she took an improv class and absolutely changed the way that she approaches people. Like, she even now goes around and say, I'm going to socialize the nerds, because she wants to go out there and actually help people within our industry just to break free. So when you were saying that, I was smiling. I go, yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more about doing that improv there. But the other thing you were saying though is that it's a more of a humane problem. It's a more that people sitting here listening and having worked in this industry for so long now, there is a big challenge within the industry of imposter syndrome. And where a majority of our voices in the industry, they go out there and they try and prove to be the cleverest person in the room. They're doing this showcasing, this sort of almost peacocking, as it were. And therefore, they're kind of afraid to let anyone see those cracks. But absolutely what you just said there was, hey, don't compete. Just be you. Learn to be you on that. This imposter syndrome is true within the field. What advice or insights could you give for people who are now nodding their head going, yep, if I was to be honest, that's actually me?
I'm sure most people are, because that same thing that says to you, am I an imposter, is the same voice that says, I still have so much more to learn and I need to evolve, particularly in technology, which is shifting at a breakneck pace. So if you're intellectually curious and you want to know more, that's the same exact voice that's sitting on your other shoulder saying, do you know enough to speak about this topic? And so I think my advice is to understand that you've arrived where you are because of the experiences that you've had, and someone's always behind you. So there's always somebody who has less experience, less exposure, who's going to be interested in your voice and what you have to say. And so being authentic and saying, these are the things I know, I'm willing to share them with you. You might have a different perspective. I'd love to hear it because I want to continue to learn. And so it is the realization that you've had these authentic experiences. They are part of who you are. And there are many people who just do not have the breadth of information and knowledge that you do. So hear that voice, accept that voice as the same one that continues to make you better, and let that voice know, yes, I'm going to recognize the things that I know while recognizing there's still much more to learn.
Yeah. And again, what great insight. It's almost like a little truth bomb you dropped there, Shannon, because as you say, there's people out there, there's this tendency to think for tech leaders to go out there and say, right, I want to teach them everything I know. I want to be this almost the cleverest person in the room. But in effect, what you're saying, and I totally agree with you, is that you don't have to be running at 8, 9, or 10 all the time. There's people at 2 or 3 that just want to hear the 4 that you know, or the number 5 that you know. So you, rather than trying to go and prove something all the time, getting out there, it's just take a notch back and just, as you said, be authentic and just be you. So that being said, what a great segue into my next thing I want to ask you is that, let's go back to Salesforce. The Salesforce noise out there is extremely loud. There's so much competition out there at Salesforce. So when it comes to standing out, and I know obviously you're doing stuff, authority-led marketing, being the thought leader, but when it actually comes to standing out above the plethora of this Salesforce noise, what kind of content or messaging have you found that's really been helped cut through that noise so that you stand out
there? Gary, I think the thing that I can share that has worked the best for me is one that probably strikes fear in a lot of entrepreneur or leaders' hearts, and that is know who doesn't fit in your box. So for us, we're very didactic about saying we don't do B2C. B2C is just something we don't know so well that we can warn you against the things that you're going to want to choose when you're customizing your CRM system. But we don't do anything that is retail or e-commerce. And so we have got a picture that says very specifically, we know who we serve. We know what we know. We know that we can help those people get to where they want to go without running into a bunch of potholes, because we see 100 organizations just like them every single month. So if we know how to focus in and deliver service excellence to companies that fit inside of that strategy, we know we're going to do a great job. So really, Gary, it's hard to say, ooh, I can smell some business around here. I know that there's something in here that we could do. But being able to say, it just doesn't fit what we're excellent at is challenging but rewarding.
No, and it comes down to knowing yourself, as in knowing what you're good at, what your swim lane is, and again, being authentic. You cannot be authentic if you're trying to be authentic with one message and then you are taking everything and anything which you can. And there, I understand that if there's a need to do that as an entrepreneur to keep some cash coming in, but the focus has got to be on what are you great at. If you want to stand out above the noise, what is it you stand for? What is a swim lane? And just be the best in the swim lane rather than the best in the pool. You know, I couldn't agree with you more. So we've talked about founder-led marketing as being what's working for you and continues to work for you. Let's talk about stuff that hasn't really worked. Let's talk about what kind of strategies or lead generations, and you know, we've all got them, haven't we? Because we've all tried the things. What has really not you thought might work for you in the past when it comes to lead generation? And it just didn't.
We have tried it all, Gary. We've tried earned media and owned media. We've tried advertising on LinkedIn, on Facebook, SEO work, ranking on Google. And I think for some organizations, that might make sense. But when you are saying, hey, I've got a very finite amount of resources that I can dedicate to finding growth through marketing, really evaluating what could the potential return be, that requires you to say, what is the outcome I want to get to first? So for us, we weren't trying to brand. We don't need anybody to recognize us the way that they recognize Apple or Costco. We just are not going to play in that market. We don't want to. And so when we tried to, you know, pay $100 for LinkedIn ads, you know, based on job titles and seniority and industry, it did not work for us. It showed zero return. We've tried advertising, sponsoring events. And so what I think, Gary, we have found from some of this wasted time and effort and budget is we have to continue to double down on the things that work best for us. And it goes back to what you were saying before about building relationships, delivering value, and establishing trust. So I think when we look at the things that we've done that didn't work, identifying who on Zoom Info was our ICP and pestering them with emails and phone calls, that wasn't it.
No, absolutely. And you mentioned it earlier before, the spray and pray method. There's, you know, people are always saying with this industry, well, we tried email marketing, it didn't work. We tried adverts, it didn't work. And it's not necessarily the vehicle that didn't work. It's because the whole premise of trying to build a relationship at scale that doesn't work. So, but if you know specifically what you want, then you would go out there and find them to start a relationship with them. That's where the real value comes. So let's stay on that. You've built a business that's both technically sound and high in trust. What leadership philosophies or practices have helped you create that balance over the years?
One of the things that I like to do from the very beginning is identify who fits inside of our culture of what we're trying to achieve. And we want to be close to the client. We want to be trusted and proactive. And that requires a very specific type of person. So we're very slow to hire. We will bring people on, we will find some side work for them or let them sub in on a particular project, and we get to know them, they get to know us, we really start to understand what makes them tick. If they need technical help, we can help them with that. We can teach anybody how to turn the dials in Service Cloud. But I can't take somebody that doesn't say, I care as much about this client as I would my own organization. I can't change your mind when it comes to your own personal ethics, values, and integrity. So we're super slow to hire to make sure that everybody that we bring in this team feels that they are running towards the same goal as we are, which is what our clients want for success. And I think to me, my number one leadership lesson is make sure that you're bringing the right people in to your culture and then give them the authority to make decisions. Because if you become the bottleneck, that's ultimately going to impact not only your customer, but the way your employees feel about working with you. So that is, I think, the biggest lesson that you can learn. And that is surround yourself with a team that has the same vision as you do.
No, exactly. And then I couldn't agree more. This is how I grew my businesses. To grow to that way is by ensuring that every single member knew the destination we were going at. They knew the boat that we were going to be rowing together. They knew the beat of the drum that we were going to do it. So otherwise it's chaos. Unless everyone knows what the actual outcome is, it just makes it a lot harder to grow a company. So when you, obviously being in the industry for so long now, when it comes to looking at other founders, and again, it's just this industry where everyone always seems to be doing so much better than they actually are, all right? But when, what do you really, but in reality, they're probably just not quite there yet. What do you think holds most founders back from growing their consultancy or being the very best that they can be? What do you think is holding them back today?
I think the chutzpah that it takes to start and lead a team is the same thing that may also hold people back. And being able to look with passion, but also curiosity at what's happening in your business that's going well and what's happening that's not going well in a strategic and then a tactical way is challenging for people who are in leadership, because you have to have a certain level of confidence to be able to do what you're doing every day. So, you know, looking for that type of feedback from loads of people, your peers, your employees, your business coach, your board members, your partners, your competitors, is something that is challenging to ask for, even more challenging to receive, but recognizing, as a dear old boss of mine rammed into our heads, that feedback is a gift. And so somebody tells you something, even if it's hard to hear, it was hard for them to tell you as well. So accepting that, dealing with it, and then saying, how do I then respond to this so that I can make sure that I get better and my company gets better, is something that is really required for all of us to do.
Yeah, it's that honesty. It goes back to that being honest with yourself, being trustful to yourself and saying, yes, okay, whether it's good or bad, I've just got to take it on board and take that feedback. But the most important, again, the next step would be taking action on it. You can go and get as much feedback as you like, but unless you're going to take some action on it, it's just knowledge. And knowledge is not the power, as people keep saying. It's the actual implementing what you've learned from it, good, bad, or indifferent, but implement it and go from there. Talking about growth and staying on that, let's talk about the future, Shannon. The future's bright. You're obviously heading in a great direction. What are you going to be doubling down on when it comes to lead generation, authority-led, founder-led marketing? What kind of stuff are you going to be doubling down for this year?
It's no secret, Gary, that there is a lot of questioning when it comes to the economy and what companies should be doing about their budgets. And that level of uncertainty takes that trust equation and erodes it even more. And so one of the things that we are doubling down on is partnerships. We are heavily focused on developing good, solid relationships with our partners to say, we want to be able to recognize when it makes sense for us to bring you in to a client that really needs what you have, but we also want you to understand the same for us. And so we are working on partner education in a bi-directional way, so we can really understand what are the scabs that we can pick, or what are the bones that we can set to understand where to bring our partners in, and the same for them as well. And I think when we're looking at trust and the volatility of trust in uncertain economic times, partnerships are clearly the way to continue to grow your business and develop your own internal engine that will help you to stay in a really financially salient position.
No, I couldn't agree. I'm a great believer in partnerships. And, you know, everyone talks about the ICP, what is your client profile? But a lot more work, in our view, should be worked on what is your ideal partnership profile? What does your ideal partner look like? Why does it look like that? And what is it that they could do and you could do jointly together? Because where we're seeing success, Shannon, within our industry now, is the fact that those who are coming together and almost forming hybrid partnerships for clients. So rather than just service or product peddlers, they're becoming these hybrid partners with clients through other associations that help that client grow. And it's such an important part in today's economic world. Absolutely. So as we come to this end of our interview, Shannon, I've got a bit of one loaded question for you. And, you know, I ask all my guests this or that. If there was one message or insight that you hope the listeners could walk away from this episode's conversation, from your insights, from your understanding, from your expertise, what would that one message be?
The primary message that I think I would love to imbue is, it is okay to fail. It is okay to fail. And I think when you look at my favorite subreddit, LinkedIn Lunatics, people like to tell you when they've done things well, but they don't tell you the 7 things they tried first that didn't work. And the reality is, particularly in tech, you're going to write code that is going to have bugs in it. You're going to send something into production that wasn't quite ready for prime time. And that's okay. But use that as a time to say, now we're going to learn from that. and have a culture that says when something goes wrong, we're not pointing fingers, we're not blaming, but we're going to use it as a platform to say, we made this mistake. Let's recognize what happened so we don't make that same mistake again and document it. Even if it is an E.E. Cummings style where you just say, these are all the things that happened and this is how we've captured it. So be okay with failure, but make sure you learn from it.
No, oh, great piece of advice. A fantastic piece of advice to end on. Shannon, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. If people want to get hold of you, potentially work with you, what's the best way they could do that?
Love LinkedIn as much as I love LinkedIn lunatics. So that's a great place to find me, shannonj.greg. That helps me to identify who the bots are in my LinkedIn DMs because they don't know that J dot isn't part of my first name. So please, please add me on LinkedIn. That's one of my favorite places to hang out.
Well, I will make sure that that link is in the thing because I'm pretty sure we don't have robots scanning up our channels when it comes to it. So they actually have to physically click on it. But at least if they click on it, it comes straight through to you. So I'll make sure that gets put in the show notes. And it's been a pleasure and an honor having you on the show. Thank you so much for your time. It's been truly great.
The pleasure was mine, Gary. I can't believe our time is up so soon. Thanks for having me on.
No, not at all. Well, maybe we could do part two at some point in the future. That would be absolutely great. Yay! Well, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us for another episode of the Growth Focus Podcast. And if, like me, your brain is now swilling around, if you've taken some of the insights that Shannon has left, please make sure you like, please make sure you comment so that people can actually see what you have learned or picked up from today. But more importantly, please share the insights that our leaders like Shannon are sharing with us could help all of us and at least some of us grow. So please make sure that you share this episode as well so that we can all grow together. So until next time, again, thank you very much for joining us. Keep striving hard, but more importantly, keep being profitable. And we shall see you on the next episode.